Live from the Next Title Studio, this is News Talk 670 KBOI. If you're talking about it,
they're getting nervous, and they should be nervous.
You know, I kind of disagree with what you're saying.
We're talking about it.
You know, I think it's kind of great that you guys have that duality.
This is Idaho Talks Live with Chris Walton and Paul J. Schneider on the News and Talk of Idaho, 670 KBOI.
Top of the morning, Paul J. and Chris, our special guest in the Next Title studio this morning, Commissioner Pam White, who is the newest member of the Canyon County Board of County Commissioners, took over the District 3 seat in January after defeating Craig Hansen in the May primary election. Congratulations on your win, and welcome to KBOI.
Thank you for the invitation. It's great to be here this morning.
Now, you're kind of a political animal. You've been around politics for quite a while.
I guess I have. 9.5 years on Nampa City Council, and then now the commission. I've been through 4 elections, yes.
And you were on the Nampa Planning and Zoning Commission for some time.
I was for 3.5 years.
How has the transition to county commissioner been going so far?
It's been very smooth. It really has. You know, before we get started, something I would like to say is I would like to actually say thank you to former Canyon County Commissioner Craig Hansen. He had over 20 years of service to Canyon County, and I think 20 years is remarkable for anybody. So yes. Thank you, Craig Hansen. And back to the transition, and thank you for allowing me that.
You betcha.
The transition has been great. I'm very fortunate to work with 2 seasoned commissioners, Steve Rule in his 10th year, Tom Dale, 3 years on the commission now, and I worked with him at the city of Nampa. I'm very fortunate.
What are some of the things that you are hoping to accomplish as a commissioner?
Well, I got my marching orders during the campaign on the Canyon County Jail, so I really do want to see that happen, and we need a new jail in Canyon County, but I want the most sustainable, the most efficient, and the one that's the most affordable for the Canyon County citizens. We do have now hired a group for a needs assessment, so the ball is rolling and we're on our way.
Whatever anyone transitions into a new job, there are surprises, not all of them pleasant, not all of them unpleasant either. What's been the biggest surprise for you in your first couple of months?
Really no surprises.
Really?
Interestingly enough, it's been amazing. And probably the most amazing are the people that I get to work with. The people, the administration building, the Canyon County Courthouse, the citizens I met while campaigning in Canyon County, some of the most amazing people. I've lived here 22 years, and wonderful, wonderful people.
There's a brand new Canyon County assessor. Tell us about the new assessor.
Yes, Brian Stender. It's great. Kudos to Gene Kuhn. 40 years, that's remarkable, too. Brian was with him almost a decade. He's so well-respected with the other employees and the other Canyon County elected officials. Just his knowledge of what he's doing. You know, we went to an Association of Counties conference this in Boise just a few weeks ago, and I watched him interact with other county assessors and their offices. He's just so qualified, and we are so fortunate to have him on the team.
He got a full endorsement from Gene Kuhn and also a unanimous recommendation from the Canyon County Republican Central Committee.
That's correct, and he will be on the ballot in November.
All right, we're going to get to the Fair Advisory Board in just a minute, but first, got to do a little business here. Join Joe Print.
Remember, you are listening to Paul J. and Chris on 670 KBOI.
KBOI News Time is 8:48. Special guest in studio is Canyon County Commissioner Pam White, who is the newest of the Canyon County Commissioners. And let's see. Okay, the niceties are out of the way now. What's going on that's terrible? No, let's not talk about that.
The weather.
Oh, the weather, exactly.
We agree.
And no matter how many times the commission votes, they can't do anything about the weather, unfortunately. Let's talk about the Fair Advisory Board. You guys are accepting applications right now for somebody who'd like to be part of the decision-making for the Canyon County Fair.
That's right. The process has been open for maybe a month or so now. But if you are out there, you're listening, and you would like to be in a volunteer position as a member of the Canyon County Fair Board, We would like to get an application from you. You can go on the website at www.canyonco.org and hit find out there and get your application and get it in. There are seven members on that board, and you work with the fair director. And so, please, if you are willing to volunteer and do that, we'd like to have you.
Now, you went back to Washington, D.C. with Commissioner Dale for your first National Association of Counties annual legislative conference. It's quite a big deal. What did you learn?
It was a big deal. There were probably over 2,000 people there. It was an amazing learning experience for me. And one of the greatest things I learned was probably the differences were greater than the similarities in my job as a Canyon County Commissioner and some of the jobs of the other areas of the United States. I was in one breakout session, and they were talking about where does the money come from? And a commissioner from, I can't remember the state, but he stood up and he was talking that he needed help and ideas and mentoring. They needed to build the schools in their county. So here's a county commissioner responsible for building the schools. I'm thinking, whew.
Yeah, that's a little pressure right there.
And you got to meet with senators, representatives?
We did. You know, they have 15-minute blocks, and there's like 85 people in the hallway waiting to get in for their 15 minutes. But they showed us great favor. We probably got twice that amount of time.
Oh, nice.
Representative Raul Labrador, we had a great conversation with him, very forthcoming on things, what's happening with health care, because it affects the county and the indigency fund in a tremendous way. Senator Crapo was so gracious, spent a lot of time with this, taking notes. I am expecting to see some really good things that are a result of our one-to-one conversation.
A lot of people don't realize all of the things that counties do, all of the things they're responsible for and they pay for. And so it's quite a eye-opener to find out exactly what goes on and what you have to do. What's the most incredible thing that you have seen since you've been there that might take a little work?
I think, well, some of the issues were obvious in the campaign, but for me going into this position, the indigency fund,
exactly.
That was something that I had not dealt with prior, of course, on the city level. But it in more ways than the fact of the way that it's growing, it's becoming the amount, the dollar amount is just growing unbelievably. But you have people sitting in front of you, and the state tells you, gives you the guidelines for what's indigent. And here's an individual that's been given a year to live. And you have to look at the state guidelines on this indigency. It was my first one. I almost had to step away because it was very emotional for me to have to make decisions with an individual that is staring at the end of life. So that is something that counties, with the state's help, and even from the federal level in Medicaid and those things, we've got to come together and find the workable solution. It's not going away.
A lot of people know April 22nd as Earth Day. And, of course, it's going to be celebrated in Canyon County. You guys have a way of doing it.
We do. It's Earth Day?
Yeah.
Well, go
Happy
figure.
Happy Earth Day.
Happy Earth Day.
You.
Exactly. Yeah.
No kidding. Earth Day. Let's go to the landfill. Saturday, April 22nd. Mm-hmm. That's the fourth Saturday in April. It's free. Canyon County citizens, you get to take a ton of your trash. You can take one refrigerator, up to four tires, and it's free. That the landfill staff, they are incredible individuals. They will help you, show you how to take care of it. They're very gracious. It's a busy, busy day. That don't get upset. There'll be bumper-to-bumper traffic. But I will say, if you are listening in Mountain Home, do not bring your trash to Canyon County that day because it is Canyon County residents and it's free April 22nd.
Yeah, stay in Elmore County. Don't go to Canyon County.
We'll be checking 2C license plates.
Yes.
And if people want more information on this, they can go to your county website, which is really good.
Yes, again, www.canyonco.org.
All right, one thing that you're not going to handle, hazardous waste disposal. And that'll be later on this year for old paint, pesticides, oil, all of that kind of stuff.
That's correct. And thank you for pointing that out for us, too. That, yeah, don't bring that, the paint and pesticides, the oil. Leave that home until summer.
Election Day coming up March 14th. Not a lot of things contested in Canyon County, but you do have something to vote on.
I think Valley View School District is the only Canyon County specific thing with something on the ballot. They have a facilities levy. The best way to find out if you're part of this election is to visit the website. Again, you can go to voter lookup, and once you're there, all you have to do is type in your address, and it'll let you know if you need to be in the voting booth.
You have a variety of school districts that are in Canyon County.
Yes, we do. Nampa School District, mm-hmm. Valley View, Caldwell. Yes, we do.
And even part of the West Ada, interestingly enough.
We do. We do. And Melba, Parma,
mm-hmm.
Wilder, yes.
Now, again, go to the county website if you want to find out whether you're supposed to be voting or not.
That's correct.
And voters can take advantage of in-person early voting up until close of business on Friday.
At the elections office in Canyon County, yes. It's right on Chicago, and that's 1102 East Chicago in Caldwell.
Well, Pam, congratulations on your election, and for your first time here on KBOI, you did well.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure. Can I come back?
You certainly can.
Absolutely.
Great. Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you. We've been talking with Canyon County Commissioner Pam White. And Chris, we got a special guest coming in after the news at the top of the hour.
We do. We're going to hear from Penny Sear from the Education Association.
Talk about education bills in the legislature. And then a half hour from then, we'll tell you, do I really have to shovel my snow off my walk? Or can I pass that on to somebody else? It's 8:56. See you after a news break at the top of the hour.
If you're talking about it,
they're getting nervous, and they should be nervous.
You know, I kind of disagree with what you're saying.
We're talking about it.
You know, I think it's kind of great that you guys have that duality.
This is Idaho Talks Live with Chris Walton and Paul J. Schneider on the News and Talk of Idaho, 670 KBOI.
Top of the morning, we are back in the Next Title studio. Joining us, President of the Idaho Education Association, Penny Sear, is here. And good morning.
Good morning.
How are you? I haven't seen you in a while.
I know. I'm doing well, and it's great to be back. Thank you.
Now, I asked you off the air just a few minutes ago the best news that you've gotten from the legislature by hook or crook one way or another this year.
I think the best news is that the legislature kept its promise to the teachers of Idaho and funded the third year of the career ladder.
Well, also, there was a bill that would have allowed public charter schools apparently free rein to hire uncertified teachers or just uncertified somebody to be there. You were against that. Now, why were you against it?
Well, teachers have to go through methodology courses, child psychology courses, all kinds of things to learn how to best present instruction to children and help them be successful. So it's not just the content knowledge that matters. It's the profession of teaching and how to do that best for our kids. And we were concerned that somebody would be placed in front of children without that kind of knowledge.
Mm-hmm. What is alternative authorization?
It's a variety of ways that folks can get a certification to teach. Teach for America is one of the ways. It's a crash course in teaching, mm-hmm. and then they're hired for a couple years in our districts. Other ways might be to have a student teacher or somebody who's working already on their degree teaching ABCTE is another mm-hmm. certification process. So it's ways around going to the university.
Why is it or why has it been on the increase?
We have a decrease in teachers nationwide, but mm-hmm. definitely in Idaho. So I believe that this is a way that folks who have thought about teaching but don't have the time or the finances to go to a four-year college can go into teaching and still has some restrictions. So if you go on an alternative route to certification, you must get the college courses within a three-year time period.
So is this kind of like a PA for a physician, physician's assistant? You go, you know, you don't. There's no doctors in the state. There's no teachers in the state. So basically, you have people with training but who are not doctors. So you have people with training who are not fully certified teachers.
That's correct. I think a physician's assistant has a doctor who oversees everything that they do. Often, alternatively certified teachers or non-certified teachers have what they call a mentor who could be down the hall or in another building, so isn't there to oversee what they're doing. So it's a little tricky.
How bad of a teacher shortage is there in Idaho?
You know, I think that I don't have numbers for you, but we definitely have problems, especially in our rural school districts, attracting teachers to come. You know, a young person to go there and put down roots and there's nobody to go out with or meet or et cetera, it's very difficult.
Is there something the IEA can do about that?
We have been working on the pipeline committee that was put together by the State Board of Education. Again, we work with the legislature. We try to encourage, we have to take care of our teachers so that they can take care of our kids. And so we advocate for teachers' working conditions, for teacher compensation, so that they're good, so that their family is good, so they can come in and really make students be successful.
Push comes to shove, though. It's very hard to attract teachers to Dietrich, to Shoshone, to Minico High School, to many of these small places, because, as you mentioned, no social life. The pay's probably not the greatest. What can you do?
Well, I'll tell you one proposal that's coming forward that we've been vetting and we're still discussing is the grow your own concept, so that folks that live in the community, such as our classified employees who are instructional assistants, have a way to get their college degree while being funded from funds from the legislature through the school district. So that's one way. It's attractive to us because we know those folks know how to work with kids.
Sure.
They just don't have the content background. Whereas alternatively certified people have the methodology background, but maybe haven't worked with kids. So kind of a mix.
There have been small towns working out deals with med students to serve as a doctor for a certain amount of time for years.
Right.
So it's not unusual there.
Right.
You mentioned to start off the legislature has decided to fund year three of the career ladder teacher salary allocation plan. Mm-hmm. How important is that? And what is it, first of all?
Well, the career ladder is an appropriation schedule where the legislature, the state, gives money to the districts, and then the districts work with the teachers association to determine what the teachers' pay will be using those funds. So it's very important. Again, it was a promise from the legislature to fund the 5 years. This is year three of that career ladder, and it was also the most expensive year, so there was some concerns there.
And there's discretionary funding as well.
Correct. That's to the districts to help them pay their heat and light bill. A large portion of that also pays the insurance, helps to pay the insurance for the employees.
Let's talk a little bit about health insurance. Everybody knows it's not getting cheaper.
Right.
It keeps getting more and more expensive. What has the state done to help pay health insurance for teachers?
Well, there was several different plans floated this legislative session. Ultimately, what has occurred is they are increasing the discretionary fund and dedicating certain funds to health care that districts have to work with. So it's going to go through on a formula just like other funds go to school districts. That's a one-year fix because we currently have a funding committee in place that is working on trying to figure out school district funding and making changes to it.
Teacher evaluation has always been kind of a strange subject because I think everybody thinks they know exactly how to do it, and really I don't think anybody does. What do you guys do when the subject comes up?
Well, currently the state of Idaho has the Charlotte Danielson Method, which is a 22-component evaluation tool. We've always said that evaluations should be used to help a teacher improve their job, what they're doing with children, so that you're looking at things they might be a little weak on and helping them find ways to improve that. Where IEA has been concerned in the past because our administrators haven't had training in evaluation or ongoing training as things change. So one of the things that we support is making sure that administrators are continually educated on new changes and how to do evaluations, conversations with teachers, because that's an important piece of evaluation.
We're talking with Penny Sear, the president of the Idaho Education Association. KBOI News Time, 9:15.
This is Idaho Talks Live. Today at 10, listen to Rush on 670 KBOI.
We're back. It's Idaho Talks Live. Our KBOI rewards code for the day, appropriately, is the word education. E-D-U-C-A-T-I-O-N.
You advance to the next round.
Yes, I do. Just like that five-year-old in the spelling bee. Except that I'm about 46 years older than that. Anyway, never mind that. Penny Sear is here, the president of the Idaho Education Association. We were talking about teacher evaluations, and it's not necessarily the evaluations themselves that people have a problem with. It might be kind of the review process?
Correct. There was a review that was done, only it was done before the legislature put things in place. So it didn't really show what is going on with evaluations. Also, I think administrators were concerned because they weren't always getting consistent messages about ways to report evaluations to the state that they'd completed and things like that. So
we had a caller during the commercial that asked about whether teachers put any of their own money into insurance. Now, my parents were both teachers, and as I recall, they put their own money into everything. But let's hear about the insurance.
You're right. They do put their own money into everything. Teachers, the association works with the district and negotiates compensation and benefits. So some districts, they may not put any money towards their own benefits. Mm-hmm. Most often, about 90% of all of teachers do put money in for, insurance for their families. There probably are districts where they negotiate full funding for insurance. So it's just a matter of the conversation.
One part of the career ladder is the opportunity to earn master teacher premiums. What's a master teacher premium?
Well, when the legislature approved the career ladder, one of the recommendations from the governor's task force was a 40-50-60, so a $60,000 tier on the career ladder. Rather than doing that, the legislature decided to create what they call the master teacher premium. In that, they wanted experienced teachers, at least 8 years or more of teaching, to go through a reflective process of 3 years and to gather a portfolio of student documents and their lesson plans, et cetera, to show that they are a master teacher. And then if they are approved after that three-year time period, they will receive a stipend for 3 years.
Back to the legislature, there's a bill that hopes to provide tuition tax credits. It hasn't been introduced yet, but what's it about?
It's actually a way for corporations to receive a credit on the taxes that they owe to help pay tuition for kids to go to private or religious schools. We, of course, are opposed to that because we believe that public taxpayer dollars should be used to fund public education.
One of the more interesting things in the legislature, the science standards, received a lot of attention a couple of weeks ago when climate change references were removed. How does the IEA feel about this, and what the heck?
Well, we're very happy that they did approve new science standards. Let me just say that first, because it's been 2000, I think, the last science standards were approved. So very happy about that. I think that Alana Rubel, Representative Rubel, is planning a session where people can come together and talk about climate change and listen to scientists who actually know what's going on. Hopefully, as we go forward in the next year or two, the legislature will add back in the climate change that they struck.
We talked to legislators a lot, and one of the ones that was in favor of the whole thing said, well, we only took out five things.
Five paragraphs.
Yeah. And I don't know. It just seems like maybe the science teachers should have been in on this, you think?
Well, it was the science teachers that created the standards that they brought to the legislature. So, you know, one would hope that the scientists and the science teachers would be listened to. And they were, for the most part. I will say that. But yes, climate change was stricken from the standards.
Getting late in the session, are you concerned that some things you would like to see will not be brought forward? You know, a lot of things sitting in desk drawers at this point in time may not see the light of day.
Well, at this point, I think that we are pretty pleased. The IEA is pretty pleased with what has gone forward or has been stopped in one way or another. There's not many more things hanging out there. We do have our eye on a couple bills that we're not sure if they're coming, but we're watching for them.
You guys are on Facebook, right?
Yes, we are. Thank you. And please follow us on Facebook. Our hotline is available to anybody, so we review what happens at the legislature and our positions, et cetera.
Now, personally, you're going to be doing something about the end of the summer. What's that?
I get to retire.
All right. Congratulations to you.
Thank you.
All right. We've been talking with Penny Sear, who is the president for another 5 months of the Idaho Education Association. Penny, thanks for stopping by and shining a little light on the education things in the legislature.
Thank you both so much. I love this part.
All right.
I love this.
KBOI News Time, 9:26.
Remember, you are listening to Idaho Talks Live on 670 KBOI.
All right, we are back. Paul, Jay, and Chris. Got a special guest on the phone here in the Nextidle studio. Greg Quintana is on the phone. And there's been some controversy. I need to do this.
Some confusion, as a matter of fact.
Some confusion on if it snows and your sidewalk has snow on it, who is responsible to clean it off? How long do they have to clean it off? When do they clean it off? And Craig, this all comes from a bill from Representative Lorcher in the legislature, right?
It does. And thanks for the word special in the intro. I don't know if I can live up to that, but, you know, it works for me. The bill is to clean up some language that got muddied by another bill back in 2013. People have kind of, you know, picked and chosen to mix and match things. And so, lo and behold, recently it's come in vogue to say that the highway districts throughout Idaho should be cleaning off people's sidewalks, which just upsets the whole apple cart. It's never been that way. In fact, there's specific ordinances in the city of Boise and the city of Meridian that I know of, same ordinance basically, that says, you know, clean off your sidewalk by mid-morning, I think it's 9 the next day. And if you don't, it's punishable by up to a misdemeanor, which kind of explains why the cities are sort of loath to enforce it. Probably ought to be like a ticket, an infraction, because that's a heck of a penalty for having a slippery sidewalk. But it's never been part of the equation for highway districts to clean off the sidewalks. We plow the streets, we put down the de-icer, we fill the potholes, we'll fix a cracked sidewalk, and we'll put in sidewalks when they're not there. But we don't sweep the sidewalks and we don't shovel them, and neither do any of the highway districts across Idaho.
Now, Craig, a couple of nights ago, one of our local TV stations, the one between 6 and 8, talked about House Bill 251 and kind of indicated that the Ada County Highway District had something to do with writing it. And they even mentioned the highway district's lawyer, Steve Price. So what was that all about?
Yeah, that was kind of an administrative flub. They pegged our general counsel, Steve Price, as being the presenter of the bill on Friday before the House Ways and Means Committee. That wasn't the case. The representative asked Steve to look it over, you know, because Steve's obviously an expert in highway district law. And Steve gave him some feedback, and because of that exchange, it ended up they put Steve's name on the bill as the presenter instead of the representative. Which I'm told in terms of being this late in the session, only the representative could bring the bill forward anyway. So, but if anybody wants to verify this, they can go back and listen to the audio from the legislature's website. They, you know, it's kind of like that scene out of Ferris Bueller. It's Bueller, Bueller. Steve Price is not there, and the representative gets up and presents his own bill, as he should.
People didn't necessarily understand what public right-of-way meant.
Yeah, and it's a confusing thing because, you know, you've got all these pieces and parts of state statute. You've got one portion of the law that deals with just the only single countywide highway district in the state of Idaho, ACHD, one statute that deals with all of the highway districts across Idaho, and then one statute that deals with transportation in general, including the Idaho Transportation District. They all have slightly different takes on definitions for pretty much everything. And so that's why the law kind of needs a soup to nuts right through, which is what we were waiting for. But then the representative wanted to bring this bill in response to some of his citizens who are with highway districts in other parts of the state wanting to get clarity on this particular issue of sidewalk sweeping and shoveling.
What is the status of the bill at this time?
Well, it was introduced on Friday, passed out of the Ways and Means Committee, so now it's been printed as of yesterday, and it's going to the House Transportation Committee, hearing date yet to be set.
All right, and time's a-wasting, as they say.
Yeah, you know, at the end of the session, it's always kind of a beat-the-clock sort of race. At this point, the ACHD Commission hasn't taken a formal stance on it, although it's something certainly we could, you know, I would think we could support, but there hasn't been any formal vote. The commissioners this morning at their meeting are supposed to get an update on legislation, where things stand, and they may very well take a stand on this bill.
So good general rule for people who own property is maintain it.
Yeah, and it's, you know, honestly, it's the neighborly thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
During snowpocalypse this year, you know, record amount of snow in December and January, we really did see, and it's not just, you know, some PRBS, we did see people come together and step up and help neighbors out and get out there and shovel for people who couldn't handle it on their own. A website, you know, Shovel Up Boise came to pass, and people were, you know, making recommendations on there. Of course, they got completely oversubscribed.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just heartwarming to see people rally in a crisis.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, have a little mercy if you have some 75, 80-year-old people who live, you know, next door to you, and maybe they can't get out and shovel those icy walks. Shovel them for them.
Exactly.
Yeah, you can do it. Greg, thanks for stopping by, clearing up some stuff for us this morning. Have a nice day.
You too. Thank you.
All right, Greg Quintana.
Yeah, he's the Ada County Highway District Chief Information Officer. So if you want the information about the Ada County Highway District, guess what? You can get it from him.
And we just did.
Mm-hmm.
KBOI News Time, 9:43.
We have solved so many of the world's problems today. This is great.
Okay, got another one to solve here. Got about 5, 6, 7, 8 minutes left in the show. A story on AP.
Mm-hmm.
Legislation seeking to this story made me so angry last summer. Legislation seeking to protect homeowners and landlords from squatters is headed to the Idaho Senate. Last year, remember this, a judge blocked a Napa couple from expediting the eviction of a stranger who had moved into their vacant home.
Right.
Remember
because,
that?
Because apparently, and this, it's for a lot of different reasons, but apparently if somebody is living in a house or an apartment that you own and they're doing it illegally and not paying you any rent, they still have some rights of some sort.
Which is ridiculous.
It seems that way.
That's because current law dictates landlords can only be granted fast-tracked evictions if their tenants are either not paying rent, which this tenant was not doing,
exactly,
or using illegal drugs, which this tenant apparently was doing. At
which,
least
which
that,
would, it, would explain,
that's what they said.
Would explain why he couldn't pay the rent.
Yeah, she.
She, okay.
Since then, the couple has worked with the lawmakers to allow landlords and homeowners to get in front of a judge within 3 days of a complaint being filed against the tenant. Now, you remember, in this case, the woman who owned this home had sold it
right
to someone from California.
And they showed up.
Who was moving up to move into their home. And this woman was in the home, not paying rent.
Mm-hmm.
She was there without the knowledge of the homeowner.
Had not signed a contract.
Had not signed it. She produced a contract, which she said she signed with somebody else to rent the home.
Right.
But it was obviously
a scam.
A scam, yeah. So tenants can seek damages if landlords or homeowners don't act in good faith while filing the complaint. In other words, you can't go in and rough them up and toss them out in the yard. The Senate Judiciary and Rules Committee unanimously agreed to advance a proposal on Monday. It now must clear the full Senate. But I have always thought, you got to be careful.
Well, it's to me, it's the same thing as if somebody breaks into your house and steals something. They would go to jail immediately if they're caught for burglary, right?
Yeah.
Well, how is this different?
This woman could not ended up not being able to. She had to give the money back, the down payment back to the woman who bought her home. She couldn't get in there.
Yeah.
And she couldn't expedite it, so it went on and on and on.
And I remember we talked about that that movie that with Michael Keaton that came out years ago called Pacific Heights.
No question.
There, and I've always thought that if you plan on buying some rental properties and managing them yourself,
see that movie first.
Please, yes, please, before you do anything, watch the movie Pacific Heights, and you may actually think up a different line of work.
Yeah, this is about a couple who sinks basically their retirement into this place to sell money, and the guy moves in and just trashes
both
the
of
place.
Them. He tells each one of them, the husband and the wife, that the other one signed the contract with him and let him in, and he didn't. He just went in illegally. But same deal in San Francisco. You couldn't just kick him out, even though he was living there completely illegally.
Yeah. And when they finally got the door open and looked inside, there were no fixtures.
Yeah, he had stripped everything.
Everything was gone. It was absolutely incredible
because he was psychotic.
That's why they say you got to be careful who you let move in with you, because
I've always thought that's a good idea.
Yeah. No, well, yeah, basically it's a good idea because of that, but you can't get rid of them. If somebody moves in and they have really no other place to go, you're basically stuck. So,
but essentially, if you've been living someplace illegally and you have no place else to go, it just seems to me that occasionally maybe the police could offer you a place to go.
Yeah. But this woman, and I would love to know what happened.
Yeah.
I'd love to know if they got the home sold.
Did somebody actually fool her into thinking that they were renting the house to her? But she wasn't paying rent to anyone. So it doesn't sound like she was fooled.
No, she didn't have any
proof
that she had paid anybody a dime.
Right.
Which is one of the... she did have this contract, and it had a signature.
Right, and how many months have you been paying rent? Well,
and the signature was one of those things that you couldn't read it. And she couldn't, of course, remember the guy's name, and the signature was like a bunch of zeros.
Yeah, exactly.
So it'll be interesting to see how this does. Protecting homeowners and landlords from squatters. I think that's a good idea.
We've got a few instant messages here, and we just have about a minute or so left. And let's see here. Bob Meridian says, my son went to a private school, which was far superior to the public schools in the area. Well, you get a lot of rich.
I went to a parochial school.
Yeah, you get a lot of rich people putting together something, and it tends to be a little better than what the government can afford to give you.
Mm-hmm.
And the head of teachers training told me she would rather have a teacher with a higher education but without a teaching certificate. It allowed her to train their teachers in their teaching methods without having to write their indoctrination. Well, and it seems to me that if that's your case, then you should offer a program where they can get a bachelor's degree from you, as opposed to a college, if you don't think that anybody else is training them the correct way to teach.
Yeah. How's that going to work?
I'm not sure. That was Bob in Meridian. And let's see. Hang on here. Got one more. Not cooperating. Dave Boise says, I would like a list of the people that did not allow public school gun education, so I am sure not to vote for those people again. That is just about the most ridiculous thing I have ever witnessed. And I pointed out, when I was in seventh grade, we had an all seventh grade assembly, and a guy from the fish and game was there. Mm-hmm. And he showed up, and he informed us that we were all going to have gun education and learn how to do this. And we all learned how to shoot a .22 rifle.
Right.
And we got to go out to the rifle range and do things like that. And it was just something that all the seventh graders did. It was pretty natural.
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty natural. And I've said this so many times. When I was in high school,
yeah,
everybody had a gun in their car. Well, not everybody. Jeannie Flager didn't have one in her car. KBOI News Time, 9:56. See you tomorrow right here on News Talk 670 KBOI.